Sound Opinions is supported by Basecamp, the world's most popular project management tool that keeps people on the same page. Basecamp is the easiest way to wrangle people with different roles, responsibilities, and objectives, so everyone works towards one common goal, finishing projects together. It's easy to use and quick to get started. Listeners of Sound Opinions can try Basecamp for 2 months absolutely free at basecamp.com/soundopinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Varidesk. You've probably heard the hype surrounding standing desks. But did you know that standing at your current desk is easier than you think? Varidesk is a height-adjustable standing desk that sits on top of your existing desk and allows you to stand up or sit down as much as you like. Varidesk arrives fully assembled with no installation or tools required and can move with you if you change office or workspace. Models start at $175. Learn more at Varidesk.com. That's Varidesk.com. Varidesk. Work elevated.
What do you love about music?
To begin with, everything.
Putting on a great show is the most important thing you can do. One great rock show can change the world.
Alan Toussaint wrote some of the most indelible songs in pop music history, putting his native New Orleans on the musical map. I'm Greg Kot.
And I'm Jim DeRogatis. In honor of his passing, we'll revisit our interview with Alan Toussaint, featuring a wonderful performance at his beloved grand piano. Then we'll review the first album in almost 20 years from New Zealand pop band The Chills. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which believes great beer can be as exciting as great music. Since 1988, Goose Island has been committed to that belief by brewing diverse beer styles like Bourbon County Brand Stout, Sophie Farmhouse Ale, and Goose IPA. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and later on in the show, Jim, I know you and I are both excited to review this new Chills album. Now, I know for a lot of people listening to the show, they're going, who? The Chills? What? Yeah, why should we care? I think a lot of folks missed out on the indie rock scene in New Zealand, that Kiwi pop scene that had so many great bands, The Clean, The Bats, Dead Sea, Straight Jacket Fits, Tall Dwarfs, Verlaines. At the very top of the heap, I think, were The Chills. Extraordinary records in the 80s and 90s, then went away for nearly two decades.
Now they're back. People will be excited to be introduced to Kiwi pop or revisit it. That's coming up later. That's the 1977 number one hit, Southern Nights, performed by Glen Campbell, but written by the legendary Alan Toussaint. Alan Toussaint died on November 10th at the age of 77, just after coming off stage in Spain. This legendary piano man started on his instrument early in life and quickly worked his way up through the New Orleans scene by becoming a session player for other musical greats like Huey Smith and Earl King, then forming the production company Sansu. He groomed an impressive quartet as the house band, Greg. That would be the Meters. And in 1973, he co-founded Sea Saint Studio, which had become a favorite haunt of artists like Dr. John, the Neville Brothers, and even Sir Paul McCartney.
And Jim, let's not forget Alan Toussaint as a songwriter. We're talking about a guy who wrote songs like Working in the Coal Mine for Lee Dorsey and Fortune Teller, which the Rolling Stones later covered. You know, with writing, producing, and arranging under his belt, his own solo career developed as well. We were honored to have Alan stop by our studio in 2013. And Jim, I gotta say, a lot of times you meet these legendary figures and you kind of wonder what you're gonna get. They may be a little diffident, you know, a little difficult to get inside what they're really thinking. And Toussaint put us all at ease. He made everybody feel right at home, like he was just having the millionth conversation
playing
he had
some tunes.
With us.
I think he would have stayed 5 or 6 hours if we let him.
And at the time, he was celebrating 60-plus years of performing, and he had this newly released live album called Songbook out. So when Alan Toussaint sat down with Jim and me in our studio, I had to ask him if it took him right back to where he started, just him and a piano.
Oh, yes. This just feels like a few days later. Everything that was happening then is happening now. I'm still trying to learn how to play the piano a bit better than yesterday.
What was that like? Upright piano in your mom's house, right?
Age six, I think, right?
Yes, six and a half, yes. You know, at six, if you're six and a half, you're going to stress that six and a half.
The half matters, yeah.
That's an old guy there.
Yeah.
But yes, I wonder about then, and I walked over to this big piece of furniture, touched it, and it said hello in such a fine way. I didn't know what to expect out of such a large piece of furniture, but it was a pleasure.
Your parents were both pretty musical too, right? I mean, they had an interest in music and playing it, listening to it quite a bit, right? That must have seeped in.
Yeah, well, my father, before I was born, he was a weekend trumpet player, played in big bands. And he was never an improviser. He was never a cat. He played first or second chair. But by the time I came along, I was the third of three children and his wife. So he had to take a permanent job because music wasn't then what it is now as far as the payrolls. Well, he was a mechanic for the L&N Railroad. He repaired locomotives.
And it was by ear that you didn't really have a teacher, right? I mean, it was kind of more you're teaching yourself listening to music.
Well, I first got started. I had about seven or eight lessons later on, but my mother gave up on me because the Boogie Woogies had me. Ammons had me, Swanee River Boogie, good heavens, and some blues that I heard late at night and good gospel and hillbilly trills. But my mother knew that I was very much interested in piano because I'd wake up daily for it. I don't rally in giving up on that because I do think students could have both worlds if they stay with it. But I was very impatient as a kid, and she was kind enough to let me go on my own path.
Alan, much has been made of Professor Longhair's influence, impact on you, that music.
Not enough.
Mm-hmm. Not enough. So can you give us a little, for people who don't know what that music was, can you give us a little of that and then maybe a little of how it's echoed in one of your songs?
Well, it's echoed in my songs, whether you can hear it or not, as for the licks themselves. Mm. But my heart always has some Professor Longhair in it, mm-hmm. in probably everything I do. First, as far as I'm concerned, he was like, I say he is our Bach of rock in New Orleans because he had inventions and some were very slight and he played a lot of rumba and rumba basses, things like that. And he had things early on like... That's the most elementary of Professor Longhair that one could get to. However, as Fess played on and on, we begin to hear things. That's a la Fess because there's a few little notes in there that was added in because you just do that. But That just was like nothing else that was going on at its time.
So, Alan, how about a song? I think that a tune that we really hear the Fess influence is It's a New Orleans Thing. You were warming up with it. You were kind enough to tell us you'd play anything we wanted to hear. So that'd be a great place to start.
Anywhere I am, there's a bit of Tipitina. Anywhere I am, there's a bit of Tipitina. Anyone from New Orleans knows exactly what I mean. Anywhere I go, something goes along with me. Anywhere I go, something goes along with me. It's the charm of the city, hey, 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 the Crescent City in me. It's a New Orleans thing. It's a New Orleans thing. It doesn't leave you just because you leave town. No, no. We got our own special swing. It's a New Orleans thing. It's a New Orleans thing. It's a New Orleans thing. It doesn't leave you just because you leave town. No, no. We got our own special sting. It's a New Orleans thing. I love to go to the quarter. I love to go downtown, stopping at the music factory and see who's getting down. It could be anyone where the music flows so freely. Could be Trombone Shorty, Dr. John, might even be me. Anywhere I am, something goes along with me. It's the charm of the city. Hey, 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 the Crescent City in me. It's a New Orleans thing. It's a New Orleans thing. It doesn't leave you just because you leave town. No, no. We got our own special swing. It's a New Orleans thing.
It's a New Orleans Thing from Alan Toussaint, performed live on Sound Opinions. Toussaint died on November 10th at the age of 77, and today we're revisiting our conversation with him from 2013. Both Alan and Mac Rebenek, otherwise known as Dr. John, came up together in the New Orleans scene working as session players in studios as teenagers. And during our conversation, I wanted to know more about that experience.
I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. I'd have said the right thing, but it must have used the wrong line.
It was a wonderful time. And we knew we were in the University of Cosmo. Cosmo owned the studio. It was Cosmo Studio. It was the window to the world to us. It was the window and doorway to the world. We had a wonderful time, and it was the learning process. It was no better place to learn the skills and crafts of what we were doing. And we were having a wonderful time. And let me tell you, Mac Rebenek was quite a guitarist and still is. Whenever I was there, of course, I was always the pianist, and he was the guitarist. I didn't know he was such a fantastic pianist. I said, well, look what he's doing behind my back. And he did it so very well. Mm-hmm. Well, we're from the same garden. We flowers out of the same garden.
A band with Snooks Eglin, right? The great guitarist. By the time you were 17, you were gigging with Earl King, right? I mean, it was quite a quick period of time there where you're working in this adult world. Were you at all daunted by this prospect? Did you feel you were ready for these opportunities as they came along?
Yes, I felt very much ready for them. For one thing, that band with Snooks Eglin, we started when I was 13, and with Neighborhood Guys, and Snooks Eglin was one of them. And he was playing when he was that age, the same as he played when he was 40. Mm-hmm. He was already there. In fact, I first heard him when he was 7 years old on a talent scout show in New Orleans. And I just heard it on the radio. I was a little kid as well. I just couldn't get over this little genius. And from 13 till 17, that was my home. And at 17 is when I was called in to play with Earl King, which introduced me to the adult world.
Now, you're replacing a guy whose middle name or nickname is Piano. So you're stepping into some big shoes here, and yet here you are playing Huey Piano Smith's role. And if I'm doing that gig, never in a million years.
For one thing, I was so in love with what I was doing, I couldn't wait to get to any piano and to play whatever was called for at that time. And I was going to be playing music that I had studied very dearly, Earl King's music, and everyone else's on the scene, but especially Earl being from New Orleans. And I loved Huey's playing. So everything that Huey had played on those recordings, I could play it exactly like him. Not cocky, just grateful and glad that I had the opportunity to play with Earl King, that good music that Huey had set the pace so and set the pattern so well.
You mentioned, you know, Professor Longhair, Huey Piano Smith, Fats Domino, all these giants. Huey Piano Smith. Was there something distinctive about his playing that jumped out at you when you first heard those records?
Yes, he was very inventive. His touch was very bluesy too. It had a finishing to everything he played. Even when he'd just play an augment called Collegian, when Huey Smith pressed that, if he pressed that same chord, something. You hear some gravy in it some kind of way. He was a marvelous player. And as a writer, with all the songs he came up with later when he started his own career, High Blood Pressure and Rockin' Pneumonia and the Boogie Woogie Flu and Don't You Just Know It, he was a masterful writer as well. I felt as dearly about playing Huey Smith as I would have if I was trying to play Rachmaninoff.
Alan, I'm fascinated about the transition from session player and gigging musician to songwriter and producer, because that's the legacy. So many incredible records. We talked about Dr. John earlier, Lady Marmalade, you know, by LaBelle, and on and on and on, and then also as the songwriter. Now, how does this kid, who's doing pretty good, making a couple of bucks, suddenly start to become, you know, the go-to person for songs and for production in New Orleans?
Well, I must say that my very early days of mimicking all of the songs that I heard on the radio, and I mimicked everything, because everything I heard, I don't care how remote it seemed at the time, I thought all the piano players out there must know that except me. So I had best get to it. And I meant in any genre, because I didn't know they were specialists. I thought piano players played everything you heard. I thought today they played Griggs Piano Concerto and tomorrow Muddy Blues. But that attitude, that innocent, naive attitude, caused me to have a very large scope and with equal respect. So it was a natural evolution for me to go on into arranging and writing melodies, and if called for, to write a song, because I had emulated so many songs before till I knew formulas. Even if I wasn't inspired, I could know just that there's a formula you can use. But of course, I, like everyone else, would rather the moments that we were inspired, because those are the most precious and sacred and dear moments in your life.
That's the late Alan Toussaint talking to us in 2013. We'll have more conversation and performances from the New Orleans legend after a break on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. And later, we'll review a new record from the architects of the Kiwi pop sound, The Chills.
We may seem happy, like everything's all right. From the outside looking in, everything's uptight. But deep down inside, we're covering up the pain. It's an old thing, it's a soul thing, but it's a real thing. Pray tell what's gonna happen to brother, who's gonna help him get further, for one another. Is that the truth, for one another? Yeah, you're right. There's old dude standing on a corner waiting for a fox to pass. The only thing he's got to go by is this is where he saw last. And there's old John, $2 in his pocket, talking loud and thinks he's rich. And look, the little fool's too cool to go to school, get a job in 2 days.
Sound Opinions is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation. How do people inspire a city to change, to improve how it feels to live and work there, to fill the streets with the laughter of people pursuing their dreams, together instead of apart? Every week, Carol Coletta of the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation unearths innovative ideas for making cities successful and interviews the people behind them. Join the conversation by downloading the Knight Cities podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or knight-cities-podcast.org.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And today we're remembering the great New Orleans musician, Alan Toussaint, who died on November 10th. Alan stopped by our studio back in 2013, and it was a real honor for us. Incredible gentleman, a great storyteller, and of course, a wonderful musician. In addition to his work as a performer and a producer, Toussaint wrote dozens of immortal tracks that have become standards in the rock and roll canon. I wanted to ask him about one of his best-known songs, Working in the Coal Mine. There isn't a rock band in creation who hasn't covered that or ripped it off.
Well, I don't consider it a ripoff. I'm very grateful to everyone who's ever done it, including Devo, which was a, which was a very interesting version.
You so bet.
So far as I'm concerned, Devo and I collaborated on something in life.
Well, I've been working in a coal mine.
I've read your interviews, and it's very inspiring, your attitude about sampling and people taking your work and reinterpreting it, recontextualizing it. Because a lot of artists do not have that attitude.
Well, I don't know, but I won't speak for them. But for me, thank you, guys. Thank you. For one thing, some put a different twist on it, and which is very interesting that they would take it and take it somewhere else, like Fortune Teller with Robert Plant, the way... T-Bone Burnett and the Bunch did that, put a different twist all together.
Went to the fortune teller, had my fortune read. I didn't know what to tell her. I had a dizzy feeling in my head. She took a look at my palm.
And some folk will do it pretty much close to exactly the way it was, like Herb Alpert did the whipped cream. Pretty close to the original. Of course, he had his own wonderful flair that, far as I'm concerned, sent it to the moon. So I respect both of those concepts equally. And again, the word is grateful.
Mm-hmm. Well, Working in a Coal Mine, where did it come from?
I have no idea what working in the coal mine comes from.
Do you remember writing it?
Yes, I do. I knew Lee Darcy was on the way, because his whole life was a smile. And he said, "Alan, I'm on the way," on the phone. And I knew it would take him about an hour or so to get there. And a little earlier that day, I had been thinking of this kind of groove and working in the coal mine. And I remember having it 3 times faster than it was. I was feeling sort of like Sister Rosetta Thorpe used to feel, that humping and sanctified kind of feeling. But so working in the coal mine, though it was unrelated to any autobiographical or biographical material person that I knew, I thought it was just right. But it didn't come off. And fortunately, I was going to just dismiss that song, because some things, when you go into the studio and you try them, they just don't work. And we did the whole first 2 verses, but when we were going into the 3rd round, it did not go well. So I just finished that and went on to the next songs. But Marshall Seahorn, who was my partner at that time, he said, "Oh, no, this is too good a song," when I had left. And he went in with the engineer and they spliced that part from the early part and put it near the end. So I guess one with a keen ear can tell that, oh, that's the very same part that went near the end. But he saved the day, and he saved that song, because it had gone to the trash can for me.
Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, about to step down. Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, about to slip down.
5 o'clock in the morning, I'm already up and gone.
That fanciful story you just told is as good as the fanciful story in the song itself. It's just, what a leap of imagination.
See, I want to go home now and speed up Alan's recording and see what it sounded like 3 times faster. I want to imagine Alan as a hardcore punk. Devo had nothing.
It went like that.
That's completely different, as opposed to the groove we all know. Give us a couple bars of that.
Oh, working in the coal mine, going down, down, down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just feel like you're trudging up from underground with the pick on your shoulder. With your rhythm.
Thank you.
Were there different approaches, Alan, for different artists as producer?
Always different approaches, yes. With Lee Darcy, like I said, it was always point to him each line. You point to him and not here, there. Hmm. But he was putting on a performance while you were doing that. He wasn't on edge. He was just the luxury of not worrying about it, because he knew I wasn't going to let him sink. But there are some artists that you can just give them the song, and they get to know it. For instance, Irma Thomas, once I taught Irma the song, she knew the song very well. Now, she would sing it exactly like I sang it to her without adding anything to it, unless I ask her, because she really thought, if that's the way you want it, that's the way I'm going to do it.
Wow.
Yes.
Alan, how about one of those songs that you wrote for Irma?
Well, I wrote one later that not as many people know. It's called Old Records, if that would be all right with you, unless you wanted to hear one that...
No, that's a beautiful song. The sentiment of that song is, I mean, there's no music lover who's not going to hear that as their anthem.
It's so good listening to old records and thinking about you. You, 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 you. It's so nice rising slowly through the park, slightly after dark, and thinking about you. You, 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 you. I knew I was flirting with the hurting, and now I'm certain that
you did the right thing, leaving me. But at least when you left so many, many sweet memories, oh yeah. Yes, you did. But like Old Man River, I'll keep a ride on a rolling. But it will never be the same without you. No, no, no. Nighttime find me counting diamonds in the sky. Then I turn on my stereo with the volume intimately low. It's so good listening to old records and thinking about you, and thinking about you, nobody but you. It's so nice, a fizzy soda on ice, and thinking about you. Memories of you seem to be my favorite pastime. I either can't or I don't want to get you off of my mind. No, no, no. Oh, and I'm not afraid to move on to someone new. But you're a hard act to follow. I just can't stop thinking of you. I knew I was flirting with the hurting, and now I'm certain that you did the right thing, leaving me. But at least when you left so many, many sweet memories, oh yeah. Yes, you did, baby. Sweet, a sweet memory. Riding slowly through the park, slightly after dark, and thinking about you. Sweet memories, a fizzing soda on ice, thinking about you. Sweet, sweet memories.
That was Alan Toussaint performing old records here on Sound Opinions back in 2013. If you want to share your memories of the late, great Alan Toussaint, give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800. While you're leaving us a message, check out videos from this session and all our other interviews at soundopinions.org. Up next, we talk to Alan about the theme song from The Dating Game and writing the most personal song in his catalog. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Well, there's a certain girl I've been in love with a long, long time.
What's her name?
I can't tell you.
Ah.
I can't reveal her name until she's mine.
What's her name?
I can't tell you.
Ah.
I've tried to make her time and time again. Still, we're introduced as nothing but friends. And there's a certain
to the fortune teller, had my fortune read. I didn't know what to tell her, I had a dizzy feeling in my head. Then she took a look at my palm, she said, "Sonny, you feel kind of warm." She looked into a crystal ball and said, "You're in love."
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. I'm here with Greg Cott, and that is the song Fortune Teller
performed by the Rolling Stones, but written by Alan Toussaint, who recently died at the age of 77. Now, that song has been covered by a list of artists you wouldn't believe. The Hollies, The Who, The Mercy Beats, The Iguanas, Robert Plant, and Alison Krauss, Strawberry Alarm Clock, Greg. When he came by our studio in 2013, we asked Alan if he realized at the time that Fortune Teller would have such a life being covered by so many bands.
I actually wrote it as a B-side, and I didn't think any more of it. But not that you try and not write a song as good as the one before, but since the company, Minute Records, had already thought that that other song was going to be the song, well, they needed, well, I needed other songs, and I knew this would go on the other side of that.
Would you mind playing a few bars of Fortune Teller for us?
Went to the fortune teller, I had my fortune read. I didn't know what to tell her, I had a dizzy feeling in my head. Then she took a look at my palm. She said, Sonny, you feel kind of warm. She looked into her crystal ball and said, you're in love. I said, how could that be so? I'm not type with none of the girls I know. She said, when the next sunrise, you'll be looking in her eyes. I left there in a hurry, looking forward to my big surprise. The next day I discovered that the fortune teller told me a lie. I hurried back down to that woman, as mad as I could be. I said I didn't see anyone, so why'd you make the fool of me? And then something struck me, as if it came from up above. While looking at the fortune teller, I fell in love. Now I'm a happy fella, I'm married to the fortune teller. We're happy as we can be, and now I'll get my fortune told for free.
All coming from the last line. That's wonderful.
God. Incredible. Fortune Teller from Alan Toussaint. I cannot get enough of this. I could just sit
That's
here
amazing.
All day.
Okay. Well, we got to go back to something you mentioned earlier, Alan, because you mentioned Whipped Cream, and it becomes this huge hit for Herb Albert, the instrumental version and the theme for The Dating Game. TV people may remember that of a certain age. Could you give us like 16 bars of Whipped Cream?
I'm going to give that to my mom because I remember, like, one of my earliest memories of watching TV is my mom was addicted to that show. But you write that when you're on leave from the Army, right? You're serving in the armed forces and you got a band on the side and you're like on leave and you put that together, right?
Right. Absolutely.
How does that work, man?
Well, that's this small band that we had in Army. It was outside the Army, actually. We'd play gigs on the weekend. And they learned that I had written Java. They got the wind that I had written Java. When they heard that I wrote Java, they just thought it was the funniest thing in the world. They just laughed. They thought it was a popcorn song, a little jive song. But I was in charge of the music that they played, and I was writing the arrangements. So I wrote about 30 songs in the air of Java. And Whipped Cream was one of them. And Herb Alpert did such a marvelous job. In fact, months ago when I went to the White House to get the Arts Medal of Honor, he was one of the recipients, and we talked about that and him doing, because he was a recipient as well, And he asked my daughter, do you know Naomi Neville? Mm-hmm. Because I wrote that under that name.
That's amazing. You started releasing solo records, records under your own name in the 70s. And an amazing hit that Glen Campbell had with the title song of one of those albums, Southern Nights, which is also a centerpiece of the songbook record. That song is unique, I think, in your songwriting history because it is so personal. What was it about that song that brought out that sort of side of your personality as a performer?
Yes, it was very personal and very real. It was not designed, even from the beginning, to be a song, but to, it was I wanted to share that part of life, and that was a way of telling that story. And it had a few things that happened with it that I consider serendipity now, because for one thing, I wrote it in F sharp. For some reason, that pentatonic leads you to think F sharp, because it's all the black keys if you just run your hand across them. That pentatonic feel. And however, that was very high to sing the melody that had come to me to tell that story. But because the story was so inspiring, and I really felt it was the kind we would like to have all the time, I really felt that a soft cloud came about this high above my head, sincerely. And I felt caressed, and I just relived those moments when I was a little boy and taking those rides out to the country and with the old folk who spoke Creole and the things that I saw and smelled and tasted and heard and didn't hear. And I felt from the beginning of that to the end that I was totally, totally inspired. And by it being in F sharp, being too high to sing, too high for a natural voice, but I didn't have the right to move the key even. So I sang it through a Leslie speaker to sit it in the trees because I felt it goes along with breeze and treetops. And I didn't feel it walked on the ground at all. The inspiration didn't feel quite that mundane, you might say. And it was just done on an electric Fender Rhodes, and I added an RMI. It was just me playing, no one else playing, except a guy named Tony Arms was beating on an ashtray. There's a little click sound, and he's beating on a clear ashtray with a little stick, not even a drumstick. But it was to share that story, and even though I didn't know whether people would be able to understand all the words because of how it was, but it was more important that it be in that sphere than how much I believe that the words could be understood.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Cott with Jim DeRogatis. We're here talking with Alan Toussaint. Alan, and a beautiful version of that song on Songbook. Could we get a little bit of it now as you're performing it?
Southern skies, just as good even when closed your eyes.
that he has found a better way. Stop this world from fighting. La da da, la da 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 da, la da 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 da, la da 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 da. Southern skies. Have you ever noticed southern sky? Its precious beauty lies deep beyond the eye, and it goes rushing through your soul like the storm is on the moon. Oh man, he and his dog, they walk the whole land. Every flower touched his cold hand. As they slowly walk by, the weeping willow would cry for joy. It would cry for joy, 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 joy. Mysteries like this and many others in the tree. They all blow in the night. Southern
Southern Nights by Alan Toussaint wraps up this incredible record, a history lesson, Alan, songbook. It's been a complete honor having you on Sound Opinions. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. It's a great place to be.
That was Alan Toussaint when he stopped by the Sound Opinions studio back in 2013. Alan died on November 10th, and we feel very fortunate to have had the chance to speak with him back then. To check out videos of this session with Alan Toussaint or to listen to any show we have ever done, visit soundopinions.org.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and that is the song America Says Hello, pops up midway through the new record, Silver Bullets, the first album, Greg, by The Chills in almost two decades. We haven't had a full-on album from them since 1996, a record called Sunburnt. In 1982, this band, which had already been going for some years in its native New Zealand in various punk guises, signed with a label called Flying Nun. The Chills and Flying Nun would become synonymous and would popularize a sound known as Kiwi Pop. You know, when R.E.M. was doing the big jangle, moody reinvention of Big Star for the indie 80s, this other sound was coming from down under, from New Zealand, that was really original. Also chiming guitars, but in a very different direction. Many different lineups through the years. There was only ever one main man, though. Guitarist, singer, songwriter, Martin Phillips. It wasn't until 1986 that the Chills released a record in the U.S. It was a collection of singles. They were big on singles early on. A lot of great 45s, very much sought after now by collectors. They signed to the Creation label in the U.K. and then to Homestead in the U.S. Got signed to a major label. The years that followed, there was music
in between. Many people were struck by the album Pink Frost, which was a tribute of sorts to living life to the fullest on the occasion of the death from leukemia of the band's founding drummer, Martin Bull. And then, slowly but surely, the chill sort of disappeared. There was an EP a couple of years ago, but not much until all of a sudden the news came from Dunedin that Phillips was back in the studio recording a new album with a new version of the band. And now here it is. Silver Bullets is the name of the record. We're going to play a track, the title track, in fact, and come back and give our reviews on Sound Opinions.
So if you're taking away your same solution, leaving us no way out to stage a bloodless revolution, abandon hope and doubt. For we will shoot these silver bullets at you. Shoot these silver bullets. Shoot these silver bullets at you. Kill with silver bullets. Charm. If forced to fight your evil empire, we have the means to harm. But we will shoot these silver bullets at you. Shoot these silver bullets. Shoot these silver bullets at you. Kill the silver bullets. You people need to know your history. If you believe it won't repeat, you want to live life as a fantasy until the blood flows round your feet.
That's Silver Bullets, the title track from the New Chills album. I really love saying those words, New Chills album. Although I didn't know what we were going to get, Jim, based on the last two decades of relative silence from this band. That EP that the Chills put out in 2004, Stand By, was okay. Sounded a little undernourished. It didn't sound like the old Chills.
The spark was gone.
It was gone. But Martin Phillips, I am happy to report, is back. This album has got all the goods that we expect from this band. That combination of bright melody and really dark lyrics is there. Phillips has gone through a lot in the last couple of decades. He's battled drug addiction, hepatitis C. This accounts for the long silence. He's lived in New Zealand all his life next to this beautiful ocean. And there's a lot of ecology themes throughout his work and his career, but especially on this record. I think this guy had a near-death experience. He came out of that and goes, what really matters? What do I want to do with the rest of my life? And there's a sort of an urgency to this music. It is protest music. There's no other way to describe it. But if you listen to it on just a surface level, it's beautifully done indie rock. You know, guitar, bass, drums, everything from these 50-second interludes that have these beautiful orchestrations on them to these longer 8-minute tracks, very ambitious in the range of music here, with a few instruments, really.
'Cause there's too many people hurting, and not enough people caring, but they're learning. Who is earning? 'Cause it's frightening and concerning. But those millions of people are frail. When they try to climb pyramids, they fail. They fail. So why should we climb?
He sounds like a man renewed on this record, and it's a buy-it record for me.
It's an absolute buy-it, Greg.
I think the politics have always been a little oblique in the Chills. We've never had a song as direct as America Says Hello, which is ranting at the superpower bully that is the United States. A rocket attack and a property boom. That's how we say hello. You know, but it's always a good sign when you and I don't compare our opinions beforehand and we were arguing about which songs to play and we wanted to play like six or seven. I personally think that the song Tomboy is just extraordinary. What a strange name for such a strong girl. It's him looking back on his high school years and saying, I was so cruel to that young girl just because she wasn't girly enough. What was I thinking? And now he realizes the admiration he has for a strong woman like that. There's a lot of that sort of introspection. The lyrics are incredibly smart. The chiming guitars and the perfect touches, a little violin here, a timpani roll there. This sort of chiming guitar pop just doesn't get any better. So a very enthusiastic double buy it. What do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, it is Thanksgiving coming up, and that means the Sound Opinions Turkey Shoot is being lined up, the most disappointing albums of the year.
Sound Opinions is produced by Robin Lynn, Evan Chung, Alex Claiborne, and our intern, Libby Gormley. On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
I love you.
Messages. Hey guys, this is Chris from Chapel Hill. I just listened to your Grand Slams episode. Great choices all around. I was trying to think of the music from the 90s and early 2000s that would fit that Grand Slam mold, and it was hard to think of any. The one band that I think did achieve a Grand Slam was Pavement, starting with Planet and Enchanted, moving on to Crooked Rain, Crooked Rain, Wowie Zowie, and then I guess the dark horse, as you guys were describing it, would be Bright in the Corner. Although I love that album. It's a little slicker.
A shady lane, everybody wants one. A shady lane, everybody needs one. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Oh my God, oh your God, oh his God, oh her God. It's everybody's God, it's everybody's God, it's everybody's God, it's everybody's God. The world's
But anyway, that would be my choice. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Hey, Jim and Greg. This is Brad Brooks Rubin calling from Washington, D.C. Just finished listening to the Grand Slams episode, and you asked about modern bands that have pulled it off, and I think you actually just reviewed the fourth in a Grand Slam a few weeks ago, which would be Titus Andronicus. And they follow the pattern pretty well. The first album, The Airing of Grievances, really laid the foundation, showed this concept of long-form classic slash punk rock with some great punk rock punch in between. The second album is really the masterpiece, The Monitor. Third one, Local Business, is that sleeper outlier that takes a while. And then the most lamentable tragedy that you just reviewed is another grand epic masterpiece, and they have some humor and themes that recur. So thanks again for a great show. Bye.
Jim and Greg, this is Peter from El Cerrito, California, and I just listened to your Billy Gibbons review of his new record. Now, I understand one of you gave it a pass and one of you gave it a fail, but I cannot believe that you both gave him a pass on the use of auto-tune on the vocals. Both of the songs you played had the horrible contemporary infection of auto-tuning on the voice. It sounded so dumb coming out of Billy Gibbons' mouth to have him sounding like Kanye West in 808 and Heartbreak, it's like, what are you, how could you let that pass? I couldn't believe it. I almost crashed my car listening to this review, and like, they're going to say something about the auto-tune and how dumb that is. But
hey, Greg and Jim, this is Candlin in Chicago. You had a Grand Slam show where you talked about four great albums in a row, and you did not bring up the Beatles. So I just wanted to say I forgive you a little bit because of your show on Low Cut Connie. I mean, you guys knocked it out of the park. I have a new band that I want to go out and buy some music for. Thank you for doing that, and I will keep listening. Thanks.
No more messages.
To share your opinions on Sound Opinions, call 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.